Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
What are the particular comforts of Lutheran theology in practice? Find out in my column in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Peter Slayton writes about growing up in a Christianity that was more about him and what he was doing, and finding in the Lutheran Confession a Christianity that focused on Jesus. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
And dare I ask, O Lord, peace even in this chamber, now and evermore. We ask it in the name of the monotheistic God, Brahma, and God known by many names, by many different faiths, a man and a woman.
For a Christian, the attitude we have towards this pandemic is completely different than it is for the rest of the world around us. The rest of the world around us does not live with hope. And so for them, safety is the highest good.
When you study biblical chronology, and if you're very careful about it and use careful use of the ancient sources, what you find out is the Bible is accurate over and over again.
I think really that the only two logical and reasonable options are to say Jesus claimed to be God, and either he understood himself to be God or he was lying about being God.
This is Nancy from Fort Wayne. I listened to Issues while being isolated with the COVID virus. I am so thankful to have this program to help pass the time away.
Well, we need to issue a spoiler alert. We're going to be talking about the final 3 episodes of season 2 of The Mandalorian. And if you, like me, it's going to get spoiled for me because I'm going to have the conversation with Pastor Ted Geese. But if you, like me, have not watched all of the season, you might want to listen to this episode a little bit later. Great insights from Pastor Ted Geese. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. coming to you from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening. We will review the last 3 episodes of The Mandalorian with Pastor Ted Geese. Then it's part 2 of our series, The Sacred Names of God. Today we'll talk about the legal use of God's name. That means that he uses his name to take possession of things, but especially of people, both as a group, say ancient Israel and the church, and individuals. And that will lead our conversation straight to holy baptism. Dr. Kevin Golden will be our guest. Then we'll go through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line, the email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the comment line 618-223-8382. Joining us for a review of the final 3 episodes of season 2 of The Mandalorian, Pastor Ted Geese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
Did this season end the way that you anticipated it would?
Yes and no. I guess, you know, this is the blanket spoiler warning for those of you who have not gotten around to finish watching that second season. We're going to spoil a couple things, especially if you're going to ask me right off the bat how it ends. So I kind of figured that there was going to be, partway through, we had a kind of a roundup halfway or near 3/4 of the way through. Baby Yoda, you know, needed to, Grogu needed to, like, they said, go to this planet and, like, look for a Jedi kind of a thing. So I figured that there would be another Jedi would show up at the end. And I thought maybe it would be like Ezra Bridger from Star Wars Rebels. I wasn't sure. I thought maybe at the very end, Ahsoka Tano would show up again. I didn't know. I didn't necessarily expect, I'd thought for a brief second that it could be Luke Skywalker, but I didn't expect that it would be. So when the last episode is called The Rescue, and it's a misdirect, you think that it's called The Rescue because they're rescuing Grogu, who's been abducted by Moff Gideon. But actually what the episode is referring to is them needing to be rescued because everything goes badly, and they're rescued by Luke Skywalker. So yeah, I didn't expect it to end exactly like that. It was not an unwanted ending, so I was pretty happy with how it ended, but I figured that you know, they were going to need to get a crew together. They were going to need to break in and try to rescue Grogu and then kind of carry on the story from there. I didn't expect that Luke Skywalker was going to show up and take Grogu away to his Jedi Academy.
But surely this is not the end of the Mandalorian story, is it?
No, IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, has a season 3 listed. So there will be a season 3 of The Mandalorian. And on top of that, then you also, this has kind of become, this season became a hub for some additional shows that Disney Plus is planning to put out in the live action Star Wars television kind of vein of things. So there's going to be an Ahsoka Tano show that was something that they talked about. They'd already been talking about a Obi-Wan Kenobi show. And Ewan McGregor, I guess, is coming back for that. And that's kind of been on and off and on and off again, but it looks like it's on again. And then, of course, the character of Boba Fett, who becomes very prominent in the last three episodes of, especially the last two leading up to the final episode. He has a spin-off series of his own coming up. So that was another thing. There's a post-credit scene at the very end of the last episode that further establishes where the Boba Fett character is going to be going in the future.
I'm thinking about this in terms of the broad plan that the writers and the producers and the director and the creators, I mean, Jon Favreau, had for this. I was under the impression that The Mandalorian was kind of like, well, let's give this thing a shot. Let's try our hand at the Star Wars universe. Very successful. Okay, let's do a second season. Are you getting the sense that they've got a big story to tell, a much larger story to tell?
Yeah, I think that the linchpin for all of that is David Filoni, who kind of was brought up under the wing of George Lucas working on the Clone Wars animated series. And he became kind of a driving force. And he's also involved in this very heavily and has directed some of the episodes. And he's kind of providing or helping provide for Jon Favreau, who's a big fan. Like, these guys are both big fans. The connective tissue between the various series that they have out there. So this particular season, again, was making these connections between the prequel films, the shows like the Clone Wars animated series and Star Wars Rebels animated series, and even with the current Disney trilogy, the ones that were just in theaters recently. So he's kind of involved in that. And I saw some behind the scenes footage where David Filoni was the guy they brought in to particularly direct the episode that introduced Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka Tano. In that behind the scenes footage, he basically said, well, you know, I would have liked to have brought this character, which is a character from the Clone Wars and also in Star Wars Rebels, but I would like to have brought her in earlier, but I had to wait until season 2 to do it. So I think that they had an idea of where this could go if it was popular. And they did the hard work of establishing the story and the central characters and the driving force behind it, this relationship between the Mandalorian and the child, Grogu. And then from that, after they've earned that, then they can start interleaving some of these other things, because there's room in the plot to do that then.
Has it, in its two seasons, maintained that almost pitch-perfect Star Wars vibe?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of episodes and a couple of characters that are a little bit wonky. There's this Amy Sedaris or something, who is kind of like the pit crew boss or something in, like, on Tatooine. And she's like a little bit like, I don't know, she seems like she would be like Bea Arthur's niece or something. Like, Bea Arthur was in the Star Wars holiday special that was like that George Lucas basically wanted to go away and never see the light of day again, but was available for bootleg for a while, and now you can watch it on YouTube. And actually, I mean, Disney's kind of embraced it, because they made like a Lego Star Wars holiday special animated thing. At any rate, like, that character kind of seems like she could be right off of the pages of the Star Wars holiday special. So it's not all pitch perfect all the way through, but for the most part, it really is. Like, I think that a lot of people are, like, most people are quite satisfied and happy with the direction that it's going. It strikes that balance between, like, and we were talking about this last time, like, the Jedi are their own kind of thing within the Star Wars universe, but it's not all about them. You also have this kind of rogue, smuggler, criminal element, the dark underbelly of the universe kind of stuff. And Star Wars kind of works best when it's kind of balancing those two things. And this is one where you get a chance for that to all be balanced out quite well.
The one thing it doesn't have is kind of prequel long scenes of trade negotiations in Senate rooms. You were not talking about the halls of power like the prequels were, right?
No. And that's the one peculiar thing. Like, anybody who's watched, like, we're kind of working our way through the Clone Wars, and we're like nearly five seasons into it. But there are entire, like, and granted, those are like 30-minute long, maybe 25-minute long animated cartoons, but they'll have like 3 or 4 episode arcs. And you'll get, like, Senator Amidala goes to this planet to talk about trade negotiations for, like, 3 episodes. And you're like, this is for kids? I don't get it. So, yeah, it doesn't have that stuff. But I think that they've established that that exists in this world-building kind of endeavor. So you can be satisfied that somewhere, someplace, there's some boring, dry conversation happening about trade negotiations. Yeah.
So let's just kind of briefly go through the last 3 episodes. Where were we at when we dropped off last time, and what does the 6th episode of the 2nd season bring us?
Yeah, so at the end of the last episode, we talked about the Mandalorian now knows that Baby Yoda has a name. It's Grogu. He's met this Ahsoka Tano, who's a Jedi. She says, I'm not going to train him. He's got the attachment issues with you. You have to take care of him. And then she says, but you could go to this planet. And when you get there on this planet, Tython, there's an ancient temple. You put him there. He'll call out to the universe and send out a signal. And if any other Jedis are around and take up the signal, they could come to him, kind of a thing. So that's what happens in the episode called The Tragedy. They go to this planet, the Mandalorian and Grogu, and he sits there. And in the midst of all of it, Boba Fett shows up with Fennec Shand, his kind of, I don't know, henchman lady. And it's all kind of at the same time that Moff Gideon shows up, and the tragedy is that the child's abducted. But you get to see Boba Fett be Boba Fett, because in the very first episode, the Mandalorian got Boba Fett's armor, and there was a tracking device or something, and that's what brought Boba Fett to the Mandalorian. In this episode, he wants his armor back. He gets his armor back, and he does a bunch of Boba Fett things that people had basically imagined Boba Fett doing but never saw Boba Fett do, because in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, he just looked really cool and walked around a lot and didn't really do much. You know. So here you get to see David Filoni and Jon Favreau go, no, we want to see Boba Fett doing Boba Fett things. And you get a lot of that in that episode. And by the end of it, he's basically going to help the Mandalorian get the child back. So then the next episode, called The Believer, is the one where they kind of have to pull together their team. And this, you get the return of Bill Burr, the comedian, as Mayfield, who's been carted off to a prison planet someplace. But he gets remanded into the custody of Gina Carano's character, Cara Dune, who's also helping out because she's now a marshal of some kind. So she gets him. They need him because he used to be an Imperial officer, and he would be useful to break into an Imperial base and get data from them. And the data that they're looking for is a way to track and find where Moff Gideon's ship is, because that's where they figure the child is. So they need to, it's kind of another heist kind of thing where they got to break in, get the information, get out. And then once that happens, then the last episode, The Rescue, is the one we were talking about, where they actually go to try to rescue the child. And that, you see the return of the character of Bo-Katan, played by Katie Sackhoff. And of course, she has ulterior motives for being there. She wants to get the Darksaber, which is the kind of fancy black sword that Moff Gideon has. So that's why she's there. She wants the ship. She wants the Darksaber. He wants, the Mandalorian wants a child. They get themselves into a big jam, and Luke Skywalker shows up to rescue them.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We are reviewing the final three episodes of season two of The Mandalorian. Well, Luke Skywalker walks in. I didn't think that would work. We'll find out whether Ted thinks it did right after this. The name of the Lord in the life of the Christian, the church, and fulfilled in Jesus. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is Blessed Be His Name, Revealing the Sacred Names of God. It's written by regular guest Dr. Kevin Golden. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House and request Blessed Be His Name, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Blessed Be His Name.
This is a message for pastors and lay leaders of Missouri Synod congregations. As we enter the last quarter of 2020, how are you doing and how's your church doing? What has the COVID lockdown done to your attendance and giving? In 25% of our churches, giving's actually gone up. So why are some churches struggling and others thriving? Here at LCMS Stewardship and the whole Office of National Mission team, we have answers and we have help for you and your church today. LCMS.org/stewardship.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to spend more time in God's Word this new year? Does your tight schedule prevent you from sitting down with your Bible? Do you sometimes find the Bible confusing? Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, a daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study with the church, past and present. You can listen anytime, anywhere, on your commute, at the gym, or while doing housework. Learn more at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider. The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. Simplyclassical.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, reviewing the last three episodes of Season 2 of The Mandalorian. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. So, Ted, you had mentioned right before we went to the break that the Jedi who appears at the end is none other than Luke Skywalker. And I got to be honest, I'm one of those who, I haven't watched the last three episodes yet. And if you would have told me Luke Skywalker is going to be in the last episode, I would have said, why? I mean, especially after The Last Jedi, why throw a bone to people who just want to see Luke Skywalker? Did it work?
Yes, it does. I mean, okay, so let's break this down a little tiny bit. All right, so this is not that hard. Like, Disney kind of really, they made a real mess of things with The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker. Well, when, The Last Jedi when it came to Luke Skywalker's character. What you get at the end of this episode is what fans actually wanted. They just wanted to see Luke Skywalker being Luke Skywalker. They weren't interested in a curmudgeonly old, ticked off Luke Skywalker who'd failed at a bunch of things. They just wanted to see Luke Skywalker. And this is what they give you, is like an overpowered Jedi Knight who does what he's supposed to be able to do, and you get to watch it. Right. That's so pandering to your audience. Is that total fan service? Perhaps. Now,
or is it repairing what The Last Jedi broke?
I think it's that. I think it's a sign of good faith towards your fan base, because you don't want to have your fan base completely walk away from you. And it definitely does that. And it also shows that David Filoni and Jon Favreau are actually fans. And also, Mark Hamill appreciated the being able to be involved in all of this. The peculiar thing with it is that, and I don't think that it's going to be a recurring character because they didn't recast him. Like, they didn't recast him. Like, with Ahsoka Tano, who, you know, admittedly was a digital character previously, like, she was an animated character before being brought into live action. But they brought Rosario Dawson in because they want to have somebody who can continue to play this character. So if they wanted to have a younger actor in a recurring way play the Luke Skywalker character, then they should have brought in Sebastian Stan, who is the Winter Soldier from the Marvel movies and probably is on contract with Disney to do whatever, right? So they could have brought him in. He has an uncanny resemblance to Mark Hamill from that early Star Wars period. So that would have worked, and they could have just had him be Luke Skywalker. But what they did is they did the kind of thing that they did in Rogue One, where they used it's not deep fakes, but they're probably some kind of proprietary CGI to recreate the face of Mark Hamill. And it's not super successful. And that way, I don't think it was as good as it could have been. In the same way that, like, when they did with Carrie Fisher, we talked about this with Rogue One, the young Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia at the end of Rogue One, and then Moff Tarkin as well. There's the uncanny valley. And with Luke Skywalker, again, you fall into that uncanny valley. It's not quite perfect. Now, they might go back and make it a little better, because they have been doing some stuff like that. There was some weird thing where they had, like, a guy who didn't know he was in the shot, and he's standing there with his, like, his arm and his wristwatch and his t-shirt or whatever, and they digitally painted him out and re-uploaded the episode in a previous episode. They did that. So it's possible they could go back and, like, tweak it and make the CGI better for Luke Skywalker. But this is what you get with that. I think that it was really well done, and it, in terms of everything leading up to before he shows his face. As soon as he shows his face, it's like, well, that's not exactly perfect. But some people are not going to be they're not going to be scrutinizing it to the point that probably I would be scrutinizing it.
Well, I think you mentioned the young Carrie Fisher. I think that they got a pass in that one because it was kind of like, okay, you have to do this. And we know what you're trying to do, but this sounds like the rare case where the CGI or whatever effect they're trying to use, a de-aging or whatever, which has been done amazingly successful in, say, the Avengers movies, just didn't work quite right.
Well, I mean, I think you're also looking at scale and budget and stuff like that. I mean, like, and timing to do it. This is a TV show. This is a half-hour TV show or 40-minute TV show. It's not a 200... million-dollar blockbuster film. So that could have an impact on it. I don't know. I would think that they would want to do a super bang-up job with it. I know that one of the problems with the Carrie Fisher one was the placement of the eyes on the head. Now, this is really kind of weird inside baseball. If any of you listening have done figure studies or done portraiture drawing or painting, one thing you learn is that the eyes are actually in the middle of the head. And if you put them too high up, then the forehead's too small. And that starts to create this kind of weird thing where the person doesn't look like a real person. It's not intuitive, though, to put the eyes right in the middle of the head. So for some reason, for whatever reason, like, that version of Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia at the end of Rogue One seemed to have the eyes too high. And there's some planes around the cheeks and the face of Luke Skywalker in this that are not natural. Now, the thing is that, of course, I've watched Star Wars and the original trilogy, I don't know, like, how many, I can't even count how many times I've watched it. So I know Mark Hamill's face better than I know other actors' faces. So it's harder to fool me to know that, like, it's just harder to pull that off for me as a viewer. It might be easier to pull it off with other people, I would say.
So is Star Wars now officially TV instead of the big screen?
Well, for now, and I would say that this is not a bad thing, because they need a break. Like, they need to take a breather from the theatrical releases, and this might afford them the opportunity to clean house and sort things out, because the theatrical releases were becoming kind of contentious, and it was dividing the fandom of Star Wars, and just even just general people were kind of ticked at certain things. And I think they need to rethink about all of that stuff and probably take the lead that The Mandalorian has provided them. Like, this isn't a galaxy far, far away, like a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Like, like we don't need it to be like our world. So in fact, you know, the less it's like our world right now, probably the better. So this idea of injecting a bunch of like gender politics, identity politics, SJW stuff, or current concerns of general population of North America, they might want to just cool it on all of that stuff and just try to tell the story that George Lucas was telling in a way that people are going to enjoy.
You will find Pastor Ted Geese's movie and television reviews at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back, it's part two of our series, The Sacred Names of God. We'll talk about the legal use of God's name, and that will take us straight into baptism with Dr. Kevin Golden. What are the particular comforts of Lutheran theology and practice? Find out in my column in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Peter Slayton writes about growing up in a Christianity that was more about him and what he was doing, and finding in the Lutheran Confession a Christianity that focused on Jesus. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
When it comes to serving their neighborhood, what could two churches 2,400 miles apart have in common? Both Grace Lutheran Church in Blaine, Washington, and Christ the King in Memphis, Tennessee, are confronting homelessness in amazing ways. Their stories are inspiring and make you want to join in with them. Hello, my name is Rahema Kavuga of Lutheran Church Extension Fund, and I'm inviting you to check out these stories and more at interesttime.org. Great things are happening coast to coast, and you can be a part of it. That's interesttime.org.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.
At Concordia Evangelical Lutheran Church of Wilmington, Delaware, our mission is to serve our community by sharing Christian hope. We've been doing this since 1938 and joyfully continue to do so in the 21st century. If you're ever in the city that DuPont Chemical Corporation calls home, or is known by some as the credit card capital of the world, we hope you visit to receive Jesus through His Word and Sacrament. Otherwise, check us out on the web at ConcordiaWilmington.com.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things, the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us, broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155.